Welcome into We Are Soccer Central, your look into the world's game being played here in the United States of America. I'm Robert Kerr, excited to be with you once again. We're joined on the line now by full-time sports writer and author for the Seattle Times, Jada Evans. There's so much going on. I wanted to get perspective from all different corners of the country, as well as nationally, as American soccer really starts coming alive. Jada Evans, good morning, and thank you so much for joining us here on We Are Soccer Central.
Great. I'm so happy to be here, and thanks for having me.
It's early on the West Coast, so I do appreciate your time immensely. But with so many different things going on, MLS has started, the U.S. women are in action, there's big news in U.S. Open Cup, a myriad of different things, and an action-packed weekend in the rearview mirror for a full-time sports writer who does a lot of soccer. What's your headline right now?
Actually, it's goals. I've been thinking about it like all weekend long. The Sounders are having trouble scoring, and I'm curious to see if some of the new rain additions will help them score. And then as far as the MLS goes in general, there's the negotiations with the officiating. And then the two teams here, the Sounders and the Rain, they've really shaken things up as far as their logo and their training sites. Then Ballard's getting started here next week, Ballard FC, with a Open Cup game. So really, it's looking at the start of the season with the teams and wondering who's going to score goals.
Yeah, that's a lot to digest there. Where to start here? So I'll go with your most recent articles. The Sounders, in their sharp new kits, finished their second game of the season goalless. And how about just, it's the topic of the moment, and we touched on this earlier in the week in another episode of the show. You mentioned Ballard FC, the USL 2 national champions. They're starting in the Open Cup here in 2 weeks' time. What's been the reaction in Seattle about the Open Cup news about MLS withdrawing? Unique, because Seattle's one of the very few teams participating, but what's been the reaction in a soccer-centric area of the country?
Very relieved that the Sounders are definitely going to be part of it. The Sounders and the MLS version really wouldn't be as latched on to the city without those four Open Cups. They were obviously very successful on different other levels. I think it might be all of the other levels. I haven't checked, but they were, excuse me, sorry. It is a little early, but they were successful on other levels, but the four US Open Cups really propelled them. So the fan base is really into that, and there's the history. So it was a wild situation there when MLS said we're going to pull out. There was a lot of anger here too, and this weird situation where the Sounders were going to start celebrating our 50 years of existence. And then MLS is like, we don't care about this 100-year tradition. So, and then the Sounders again, that was some of their first big trophies. And then obviously they go on and win the two MLS Cups and the CCL title. So relief on that end. And then pure excitement on the Ballard FC scene. They're entering their third season. They won the championship, the USL 2, in their second season, and they're playing at Memorial Stadium, which is a stadium at the Seattle Center that has, I think, about 6,000 seats, maybe about 4,000, but they've already got, they're already close to 2,000 fans that are planning to be a part of the inaugural season. And then they're definitely trying to draw really hard for the Open Cup match on the 20th. And so there's a lot of excitement and a lot of relief. And then there's that fun thing of, could the Beller team face the Sounders? And so yeah, there's a lot of relief and excitement that we're going to hold on to that tradition, at least in this corner of the world.
I think everyone's reeling a bit, but thank you. That was a lot of insight, a lot of different parties and feelings involved with the MLS's decision, coming from a place that has heralded their success in the competition. They have history, and so a team that has history witnessing soccer or MLS trying to kind of just sweep away one of the few things nationally that has some legitimate history and some tradition and stories behind it. On the Ballard FC front, they're joining it for the first time. How much, I guess, does soccer in the Seattle area permeate down to that grassroots level? Obviously, it does. You said there's 2,000 or so fans there. Is USL Tooth something that people have interest in? You get views on when you write about it?
Yeah, actually, I'm not. Well, actually, I think when I didn't check the Open Cup story, but I think there were a few there. But it's like a social media more so thing. But we definitely get clicks and such, and people are interested. They're a unique story. Ballard has a fun kind of background, a rebellious type. It used to be a city. It isn't a city. It's part of the city. It's this whole thing. But they've got a quirky kind of feel as far as part of one of the areas in Seattle. And so the team really just fits in with it. It's just the USL 2 version being a pathway to the pros. That kind of vibe really works well in Ballard. And then they have great kits. So yeah, there's a lot of excitement about it. But there has been historically, there used to be I think it was when the PDL version of it was there was a Kits app, there was a team in Kits app, and so there's interest in that, seeing the college area, high school area type players be able to have a spot to play and advance. There's definitely that interest in this area. And then the now this season, because of not exactly because of, but in talking to some of the owners, there's an interest. There's five more teams, and so now West Seattle has a USL 2 team. So does Bellevue, and Tacoma has one, and I forgot the other one. But now there's going to be five in this area, so it's cool. There's a lot. The soccer culture was strong here anyway, but it was kind of a little bit of a subculture, and you can kind of see it bubbling up to be more so one of the mainstream teams here.
That's exciting, and I'll have to look into that. Would you say it was like a Ballard was a micro city within the city?
Yeah, so it was the city, and then Seattle gobbled it up basically, and so now it's I guess you would call it a neighborhood in a sense, but it's not. It has its own, its own vibe, is still holding on to that city.
Sounds like there's a USL 2 division popping up out there. That's something that we have in common out here. I'm a very active and participate a lot in the USL 2 Great Lakes division out here. And I think the Flint City Bucks might have crossed paths with Ballard.
Yeah, I think they beat them last. They either kicked them out of the tournament, their Ballard's first year, or they beat them this year, or last year. I can't remember, but they do. I remember them crossing paths. I was born in Flint, so I'm very attached to it, obviously.
Oh, very well, that's a great connection here. And speaking of Michigan connections, let's switch over to the women's side. There's a lot going on out there. NWSL, Seattle Reign. There's been a bit of a name change, but while we're talking about people from Michigan out in Seattle, Bethany Balser, the striker for Seattle Reign, renewed or she got a contract extension. Kind of how important is she? What kind of a role does she play? How embraced by the community out there? What is Seattle's take on Bethany Balser?
Oh, she's really, she's a central character, I guess, person for the rain, especially this season with some of the transition that they're going through in terms of Megan Rapinoe retiring and Rose Lavelle leaving. She's been essential, definitely in the locker room. She's really positive and taking on more of a leadership role in the locker room. I think this is her. I think she's entering her sixth season. And then as far as, like I was saying, as far as goals, I mean, she's the one that's been leading them in scoring since she signed in 2019, which is a quirky kind of fact for her, because the she's been that she's been essential, but at the same time, some of those goals aren't like game winners or things like that. So you could kind of look past it, but yeah, they're not successful in the long run, or as in the overall season, without her contributions. So I'm excited to see what kind of role she's going to play this season, when she's definitely her and I think Jordan Heidema, they're going to be called on to really, be aggressive, get in the box and get those goals. So, and that's her headers are just exciting to watch. So she's one of those players that has really is a popular player with the fans, and can be somebody that they can get behind to grow their fan base here.
They were successful last year, made it all the way to the NWSL final. Unfortunately, they fell at in that final game, 2-1. Having that leader, you're saying that Bethany Balser, leads the way, leads scoring. She does continue to defy the odds. She is a Division III player here in Michigan, and made her way and leads the team for one of the most successful leaders in that league. And which is incredible, and it seems like she'll be needed with the changing of the guard. It seems like a new era for the Reign with the rebrand, and then the retirement of legends like Megan Rapinoe. But her story also reminds me of just how fragile soccer careers in the United States can be. I had her on Michigan Soccer Central a couple years ago, and she said that, largely, if it hadn't have been for her coach at Spring Arbor University, hitting the phones and getting her as many tryouts as possible, without him, she might not have even made it to the pros.
Definitely. That's what I understand of that part of. I haven't been able to talk to her too much about her past, but that's the part that I know the most about. And then she's one of those players that just made the most of the opportunity. And I just it's been impressive. She's definitely has the talent and is able to show it in. Laura Harvey, the Reign coach, is very big on consistency. So when she came back, Bethany's been consistent no matter what the situation, no matter the game. I mean, she came on, didn't start because she was kind of spotty as far as starting this past season. And she came on for Megan and got the assist, and really that she was changing the game. They really had the opportunity there to get an equalizer. So yeah, she's a really hard worker, but very kind of nonchalant about it in a sense, but very hard worker, and very exciting to watch her play, and just a really cool person to have a conversation with after games. I mean, she's really got it all, and she knows how to she knows how to utilize it. So I'm glad that she's in an area where she's appreciated and can make the most of it. She's one of those unique players or people that actually wants to retire here. She wants to, that's a rare thing to be with one club, but she can see that for herself. Obviously she'll go, where she's wanted and whatnot, but she can see that for herself as far as just being one of those one club kind of people, which is cool.
That is cool, and that nonchalantness, I think that it's a Midwestern amicable nature, perhaps.
Yeah, probably.
But from here in the Midwest, I'm not sure if I fully understand. I've alluded to the renaming a couple times. So what is Seattle Reign called this year, and what was the story with us switching a couple times here in the last couple seasons?
Excuse me. Yeah, so this is the part about the rain, and actually when I'm gonna talk to one of the originals, Lou Barnes, later on today, and it's fascinating. So they are the rain. It's the Seattle Rain, and really low key with I would probably say just about, yeah, they've always been the Seattle Rain with just about everybody up here. But at one point, the Predmores, Teresa and Bill Predmore, who wanted to do more and obviously needed more investment, they sold to the OL Group, which is in France, Lyon. So that's why they became the OL Rain. And they took everything. They stripped them, basically bare, and completely stamped them as a French franchise in a sense. And then but they got into some financial troubles and were t sold. And in, I guess, Michelle Kang, I think it was like around spring, summer last year, Michelle Kang got on board with the new owners. Oh my gosh, I'm messing it up on myself. John Textor owns Eagle Football LLC. So she got on board with Eagle Football, and they were the ones that took over the OL franchise in Lyon. And she owns the Washington Spirit. So therefore, the Rain had to be sold again. And that they took that opportunity to go ahead and go back to what they were originally, which was extremely popular. When I tell you that people were irate, and this is I'm not saying like the whole, it's not like a Seattle Seahawks kind of fan base, but of what is a hardcore or even a surface level fan of the Rain, irate that they took the Queen away. And it's like the Shield has the Queen. So they were irate that it became a lion, that it became French, that it was a mad situation. So the fact that the Queen is back, in a sense, people are ecstatic, and they like the way that it looks, the little sleek branding. So yeah, so they're back to the Seattle Rain, which is where the way that they originated, and it just looks a little bit more fresh, but they still don't have an owner.
No.
So yeah, they do not have an owner. So the Sounders are in communication with them as far as a possibility to be the owners. So that's the interesting part. They've been the as an organization, I do not feel that they've been on solid footing since they announced their existence. But as a team and as a performer, as a, as a, I want to buy a ticket and see a good match, a good soccer match, they have been on point since the beginning. So it's an interesting situation where the players, no matter what, have been up in the upper level of the NWSL, no matter all of this madness that's been going on behind the scenes. It's a wild situation. But they're the Seattle Rain. They've always been the Seattle Rain.
Yeah, it sounds like through all of that, everyone is excited for the original name to come back, despite all the hoops here. That's quite the tale of
Yeah.
one way to name one team that's just got a not too long a history, I don't imagine, right?
No, it's like 2012 is when they announced the team, and then 2013 is when they played their inaugural season. They're one of the NWSL inaugural teams, or charter teams. And I even skipped over the fact that they dropped the Seattle part because they moved to Tacoma for a hot minute. So yeah, it's been interesting, but
So,
they're our team.
are they going to be playing at CenturyLink, or where are they going to play home games this year?
Yes, that was the positive about the ownership, the French ownership. They were able to invest, so they will play at, or they do. They have passed. I think this is going to be their second or third season at, it's Lumen now, Lumen Field, and so they'll play there. They play with the Seahawks, and that's where also where the Sounders play. So that was a good thing. And then they took over the Sounders training facility. It's in Tukwila, Starfire Sports. So those were the positives as far as the owning the OL group owning them, because they were able to broker some deals to get them in places that they should be. You know, they should be playing there with the Sounders, and they should have a great training facility too. It's not their own training facility, but still it's a good space. It's better than what they did have. So there's some good.
So the rain season starts in 2 weeks or so. Do you have any kind of feel? Do you have any impression of how they might do this year? Or is it too soon to tell?
Soon, but as I was saying earlier, they've always been consistently good, definitely good performers. So I'm expecting that, but that's because that's based on history. The interesting part now, because Alana Cook got a minor knee injury, they don't have any U.S. Now internationals, U.S. yeah internationals on the team right now. And that's an interesting thing, because obviously with Megan, but for sure with other players throughout the years, they've always had some sort of representative on that team. So they brought in three internationals. So that's going to be the interesting part. They've always had top talent. They've always been solid defensively. So the curious thing for me is just how they're all going to blend, because it is a transition. It's a big transition, and within that big transition, there's those top level U.S. players outside of Alana Cook, because I'm always, you know, just because of the injury, I'm taking her out of the picture. They don't have that part that they've always had. So it's going to be interesting. I'm really curious to see how they move forward in this new era for them.
Zooming out just a little bit after 2 weeks, change of subject here. Just a couple more minutes with you this morning. After 2 weeks of MLS action, what's your immediate like kind of a hot take of the season so far?
Ooh-wee, hot take.
There's a lot.
Yeah, like I could say a whole lot. The wildest take, or the I'm just fascinated with how the front office of the league continually disrespects all of the things that buoys or makes the league the league. I mean, you know, if you go back a little bit, they were disrespectful in negotiations with the players. Now they're being disrespectful in negotiations with the officials, and the media even caught astray as far as they cover. I guess they believe there's too much interest in Lionel Messi, but at the same time, all they push is Lionel Messi. So I'm like, this is, you know, it's been wild. It's been a wild few weeks to watch that level, because I don't get too much into the actual national level of it, but that's been wild. I've just left and right. It's just like, okay. And then obviously with the Open Cup, I mean, I've never seen such a disconnect between the top brass and the fan base. And I'm like, no wonder this guy got booed, Don Garber got booed so mercilessly at the Columbus Crew when he was handing out the trophy. I don't know if you watched that match or saw that. That was wild. So I was like, no wonder, you know, because I am a little bit new still. I started covering the Sounders in 2019. So yeah, I've never seen that bad of a disconnect. So that's really what I'm stuck on. And I'm really stuck on also the I'm really hyper interested in the negotiations with the officials. Not that anybody was raving about, I don't think anybody raves about officials in any sport, right?
No.
You know, there's a they're obviously they're essential, and it should be treated as a job. So just digging in and finding more about what those people go through, again, it's wild that you're not treating them better, considering the such the importance, and then the fact that you do have the best player on earth right now in terms of, playing. It's just their safety issues. It's just everything. So watching all of that is really what I've been distracted by, and it shouldn't be a distraction. We should be watching some incredible soccer, which, there's been some good games. I love the snow game. I think it's wild that they play in the snow like that, but Real looked good, and it's just the other fascinating thing for me is that Real can score 3 goals in the Sounders and, dry, slick turf that's ideal for them can't get, any. So like this is it's been interesting. That would be what's distracting me. I have to say it's a distraction right now because I haven't really been able to dive too much into the soccer of it all, and it's going to be a good season. There's some really entertaining good players in the league this year, so I don't like that I'm distracted by negotiations.
Yeah, that there's a whole lot to digest in the 4 or 5 years you're covering. I got one last question. We got about a minute to go. In your 4 or 5 years covering soccer to an extensive level, what's been your favorite, either your favorite moment or the favorite thing that you've learned so far?
Well, I can't take away the CCL championship. I mean, that was intense. That was 60, 68. It set a record as far as the attendance at Lumen, and the way that the most impressive or the fascinating part about it was just that the Emerald City supporters, they actually had enough people and enough time to put little plastic squares on each chair so that there could be a stadium-wide TIFO. And I was just like, and it was incredible to see it unfold, the way that the Sounders won. And the, I think it was like in the 78th minute, people pulled out the cell phones, did the whole flashlight thing, like, it was just electric. And I've been a part of big games before in just about every sport, but that one you could just you did I didn't know that people Seattle's interesting. Like the Sounders have a definite 30,000 or whatever fan base that will definitely, no matter what, come out there. But then to basically double, well, definitely double that, and everybody just be completely into it and on the Sounders side, that was just so much fun. It was really so much fun for me. And then like the thing that I've learned, I really love learning about the history of the Sounders, because like I said, they technically speaking, if we're really going to be, nitpicking, could you really say that they have a 50-year history because of the fact that, it wasn't continuous, but it really is, and I always write it in the sense of, this is the pro level. This has been the team. The Sounders have been that team no matter what. And I just love learning about the history of it and all of the different people who are still around and still making it happen. And I just find that very fascinating. And just like with Ballard, I tell the founders all the time that I'm just really impressed with that because they've been able to tap into something and grow and then be able to win. And that's what's, that's the thing for me. I mean, I love covering winners, and to be a part of something new to me that, has been able to have that continuous 50-year history and then on various levels be extremely successful. So I like that. I'm interested to see what's going to happen in the future for the team, but yeah, definitely learning about the past has been fun.
She is Ajayda Evans, author of the book Game On and a full-time sports writer for the Seattle Times. You can find her on X, Ajayda Evans, and seattletimes.com. Thank you so much. You are in such a rich area of the country for the world's game, and thank you for sharing. You got so much good stuff going on, from amateur stuff and the men's and the women's. Thank you so much for joining us here on We Are Soccer Central.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. I love talking about soccer.
Big thanks to our special guest, Jada Evans, sports writer for the Seattle Times. Great to get a different perspective of the American soccer landscape. A full-time writer, but still getting to know the sport, and really good to get an insight of what someone who's really getting their arms around the subject and think about what the leadership at the very top of U.S. soccer, the Federation, and MLS. Really interesting to get her thoughts on the leadership of the sport we love here in the United States. All right, be sure to check out We Are Soccer Central. You can find this show, obviously, here on audio platforms such as the Spotify and Apple, and in video versions on the We Are Soccer YouTube channel. Lots of great content on the way. We are going to be previewing a couple different leagues kicking off here in the summer. Love our amateur summer soccer here. And then we're going to be opening up the subjects to a lot more national stuff and really not being inhibited by the restrictions of Michigan. So, thank you, everyone, for tuning in once again. Until next time, everybody, please enjoy your soccer.